Morning all, welcome to this meeting of the Cabinet. Could I have a note of any apologies?
I have one apology, and that's from Mr. Bourne.
And the order of business?
A couple of things to say. We've tabled item 10. The convener has agreed to accept this as an additional item, well, an item of urgent business. It was on the agenda as a to-follow paper, but it was only circulated this morning, both in the electronic forum, and it's been tabled today. And with regard to item 11, which is the purchasing new properties in Midlothian for use as council housing, it's a report by the Joint Director of Health and Social Care. When we come to that item, we'll need to suspend standing orders to be able to consider it.
I just ask for colleagues' agreement at this point that when we do come to item 11, we agree to suspend standing orders for that item. Thank you. Okay, that takes us. Have we any declarations of interest? Thank you. Which takes us to item 4, minutes of, firstly, the special meeting of the 27th of May. Happy to approve. And the normal meeting of also the 27th of May. Thank you. Which then takes us to item 5, inspection of Midlothian Council's adoption service.
Good morning. As already stated before, we've been here before in relation to the Midlothian adoption report, which was a very positive report in relation to last year's report. We have two good gradings and one adequate grading in relation to management and leadership. I can update people that we now have a new team leader in post who we will hope will take forward the management and leadership of this service. So yes, a fairly positive report and certainly good improvement from last year, and that's a commitment from staff to do more work in relation to the Form E's, which was highlighted last year as being quite poor, and also a commitment from our legal services as well to offer tutorials, etc., to take this work forward. So all in all, good results. I can also talk to the Fostering report, which unfortunately wasn't as positive as last year's, and this was, as I've already explained to certain people, a procedural error which we have made. We've held our hands up and, you know, we've taken accountability for that. I can advise members that the inspectors are back today for the next 2 days to review this, and we're hoping that our next report will be more positive. They are only grading us on the week because the rest of the report was satisfactory. And again, it highlights in the narrative of the report the good, hard, committed work that the team are taking forward at this time. Okay.
Thank you very much. It is quite disappointing that, again, we've got a procedural error that causes a bit of concern in the community, and I just look for assurance that procedural errors won't happen again.
I mean, we have rectified the problem, we believe. We know what it is, and, you know, because we're such a small local authority, we obviously can't go into detail. We've worked really, really hard to overcome this. There's an action plan in place, and the inspectors approved this with immediate effect to say that this would hopefully reduce the chances of anything happening like this again. I can add that there was at no point was any child placed at risk in relation to this, but yes, it was an error that we did make and won't do it.
Thank you very much. I do know and I appreciate that the content of the report was quite complimentary, but the headline news is what folk read, and it was disappointing. Hopefully that will not happen again.
I think, again, it's. I know we've touched on this before, but the fact that we are talking about essentially one team being inspected by two different groups of people and two different outcomes for the same group of people, it is a bit of an anomaly, but it's encouraging to know that the inspectors are in again so soon to look at what we're doing there. Is there an indication of when they would report off the back of this current visit?
We'll get a verbal update tomorrow, and then they'll submit it in writing, hopefully within a fortnight following that.
Okay. Thanks for that. Happy to accept the recommendations for item 5 and 6 on that basis. Okay. Thank you very much. That then takes us on to item 7, which is the outcome of Scottish Government Regeneration Capital Grant Fund bid. Ian.
Thanks, Chair. This is a report to advise that a bid for Scottish Government Regeneration Capital Grant has been unsuccessful. Just to advise, in April, Cabinet agreed to submit a bid to bring back into use an historic building to the rear of the Tolbooth Cross Keys area and to undertake public realm improvements on the highway at the eastern part of the High Street in Dalkeith, and that project was valued at some £360,000. The total bids for the fund at that stage, we were advised by Scottish Government, was heavily oversubscribed. I think some of the figures are in the report before you. Essentially what happened was Scottish Government Regeneration Team then took a very closely defined view as to what sort of projects they were more likely to favour. And they tended to favour ones which had a high content of improvement and restoration of historic buildings rather than public realm. And I think it's just a product of the of that rather closely more closely defined approach to try and whittle down the substantial over subscription, which has unfortunately meant that this bid from Midlothian wasn't into the next round. I mean, despite that, there has of course been substantial development in terms of improvements within the High Street over the last 5 years. So it's not as if it's not been the case. In terms of that end of the High Street, Buccleuch were still planning to do their work at the entrance to Dalkeith Park, and also we're obviously very pleased to see that Melville Housing Association's restoration and reuse of the Corn Exchange, including some museum use as well, and they'll be working on the public realm immediately at that location, and in fact surrounding the building, and they've done a lot of work on that already. So it's not a totally bleak picture. There will be further opportunities to bid for funding. They're almost likely to become available over time. That's the nature of these things. So the recommendations, Chair, are as set out in the report.
Thank you. I mean, certainly disappointing not to achieve the funding, but when you look and see that the sort of the applications were almost 10 times that of the fund available, I suppose it is understanding that there had to be some level of criteria applied to work out exactly which bids should be successful. Always other work that we can be doing, and I'm sure the team have well experienced in looking at what other funding is available there, so we do need to just continue to work to make sure that we take every opportunity we can and try to secure any funding that does become available. Any members, any other questions or comments to this report? Happy to accept the recommendations at 4. Thank you. Takes us into item 8, which is the Easterbush Development Board.
Chair, this report provides an update on the work of the Easterbush Development Board. You may recall that the Council took the initiative, along with Scottish Enterprise and with University of Edinburgh a couple of years back, to put together a bush framework master plan, which tried to take a holistic view of the whole bush area. Of course, it is one of the most significant and important employment areas for Midlothian, and recognised as such in ambitious Midlothian, the Council's Economic Recovery Plan, as one of the key sectors, one of the key growing sectors. The work, emerging from that work on the master plan was the formation of the board, as the Easterbush Development Board, in 2013, and it brings together all of the major players at the bush, plus representatives from the Council and from Scottish Government. And essentially, its main aim is to provide some overall context for the continuing further expansion of the Bush estate. And as part of that work, Midlothian Council provides project governance and secretariat support to that board. First meeting was held in August 2013, just about a year ago, and the minutes of that are attached to this report. Those minutes were agreed by the board at the second meeting it held, which was just last Friday, 22nd of August. There's a lot of commitment and from the partners around the table of the board to this, which is heartening. There's a huge amount of investment taking place and money secured by major players to expand further, particularly Roslin Institute and the University of Edinburgh. Two issues which are particularly significant at the moment are the infrastructure side, ensuring that we don't have the expansion of this area constrained by infrastructure, most notably transport, and the Council's got a major role to play in liaising with Transport Scotland and taking things forward with them. And secondly, branding, trying to get Easterbush branded as something which is significant and has a sort of context of its own, and there's a fair bit of support around the table of the board for that. So, Chair, the recommendations are set out in the report, including that the Council continues to provide project support and governance to the board, which you can do within existing budgets. There's no additional money required.
Thanks, Ian. Jim?
I'm a member of the board and I'm happy to accept the recommendations as outlined by Ian.
I think there continues to be so many exciting opportunities presented at the Bush that it's important that we do continue, I think, to have a strong partnership there, not only with the work that's already going there, but the potential for the future at the Bush and the opportunities it presents, and not only to employment opportunities, but the learning opportunities through the schools. How are the links with the schools progressing in that respect, actually? Because I think it's a wee while since we've had an update on that. John?
The links are progressing reasonably well. There's maybe not as much progress been made as we would have liked. There's a lot of willingness for the likes of the university and other key players like Rosalind, Pentland Science Park to do more on this. But to be honest, there is a lot more we could do with this. And maybe with the new shape of the new divisions, that's something we could really make a move on, because there is a lot of willingness for the partners to get involved in this and work with the council. And there are tremendous opportunities there. And there will be up to about 2025 and beyond. So it really is an area we really need to focus on, and that fits in with the single Midlothian plan and all the different priorities. So I would just say a lot of willingness out there, but still a lot of work to be done to take advantage of the opportunities.
No, that's encouraging, because it's not every council that has an absolute world-leading facility such as this on its doorstep, so we've really got to take the chances when they come to us. Happy to accept the recommendations. That then takes us to item 9, National Planning Framework 3. Ian.
Okay, Chair. The National Planning Framework number 3 and Scottish Planning Policy were both published by Scottish Government in June of this year. They are particularly important documents because they have a major influence on all aspects of the statutory planning process in Scotland. That's in terms of strategic development planning, so that's CESPLAN for ourselves. CESPLAN needs to take account of particularly what's in the National Planning Framework number 3. Local development planning, so our Midlothian local development plan needs to account for what's in NPF 3, but also particularly which is in the Scottish planning policy. And the impact on planning applications is significant. And essentially because Section 25 of the Planning Act means that planning applications have to be determined in accordance with what's in the development plan. The development plan is heavily influenced by, or significantly influenced by, Scottish planning policy, and therefore you can see the route through to how individual planning application decisions are made, particularly major planning applications. You can route them back through the development plan to the Scottish planning policy. Both of those documents, of course, the NPF 3 and the SPP, were published in draft some time ago, and the Council took the opportunity to make comments, but these are the final versions which are now on the stocks. Just a couple of things to mention. NPF 3 is a prioritisation document in particular. It defines national planning priorities and schemes of development, somewhere in the region of a dozen or so. Therefore, it influences the direction of capital investment across Scotland in those sorts of projects. You may recall that this council highlighted three areas it wished to see come forward through NPF 3. One was the Central Scotland Green Network, and that is identified as a national priority. Two others were the infrastructure links through to the Bush Estate, we just talked about a minute ago, and also improvements to the city bypass. And I certainly can say that the submission from City of Edinburgh Council reflected also concern about the importance of access, accessibility and infrastructure to the life sciences side of things. But also City of Edinburgh Council were concerned about city bypass, so there was a concerted effort there. However, those two particular items, that's the Bush infrastructure and city bypass, were not specifically named. However, if you look at the summary of the main elements relating to South East Scotland, which is a part of the NPF 3, it picks up a lot of those issues. So I'd say, well, we're not named specifically on the main list, but there's plenty there, I think, in the text of NPF 3 in relation to South East Scotland, which says that those things have clearly been taken on board and looked at. And I think that's a hook to press for investment and for attention. Just turning to the Scottish planning policy, set out as a huge document, and we set out fairly briefly from pages 41 to 49 of the report the main summarised areas. And Janice Long is here and can certainly provide more detail if any members are asking about that. It is a useful up-to-date statement of national planning policy. It provides a good basis for development planning, and it addresses some areas of rather more recent activities such as hydraulic fracturing, and also provides some updated advice and guidance and policy on particularly such areas as wind energy developments. On that basis, Chair, the recommendation is to note these publications, these significant documents, but no more than that at this stage because they are final documents.
Thanks, Ian. I think, yeah, it's encouraging that both the Bush and the bypass have been made reference to. I mean, obviously, the document can't take account of every individual project, so actually having them noted in there are significant. I think it's also important that we're able to place ourselves to take advantage of the fact that the enhancement to airport and freight capacity in the Forth are in amongst the national priorities, because our location certainly makes it a real bonus if we can have improvements in these areas for companies in Midlothian to who are looking beyond our borders to expand and to grow their own businesses. So hopefully we can take advantage of these. And I would assume, as with many members, we'll watch the developments in the fracking with great interest, because obviously that's something that I would imagine will be in a lot of people's minds at the moment as that technology develops, and we'll look at what might be approached from Midlothian's point of view and how that will impact on us as an authority. So I think we'll have to watch that one very, very closely as it develops. Any other questions or comments from colleagues? Okay. That then takes us to the additional paper item 10, which is the call for proposals for social policy innovations. Kenneth? Or Mary, sorry.
Thank you. This is the purpose of this report is to request agreement from the Council to submit a proposal under the European Commission funding stream as a partner with the Improvement Service and the University of Edinburgh and the Midlothian Community Planning Partnership. The background to this is we held a seminar with the Improvement Service, which members of the administration and senior managers considered priorities for improvement. And as a result of that, the Improvement Service approached the Council to offer the opportunity of partnership with them and the University of Edinburgh to apply for this funding. The deadline for this funding is set up as the 28th of August, and only one national demonstrator site is likely to succeed in Scotland. And given the strength of our partnership and our partners in this, we felt that we were able to put forward a proposal. The draft proposal has been prepared in a very limited time frame, as you'll understand, but the principle is intended to adopt a co-productive approach. It's looking at projects focusing on the existing areas. Neighbourhood planning are three target areas of Woodburn, Mayfield and Gore Bridge, and closing the gap. So we're looking at the work that we've already identified in Midlothian. The resource required is £200,000 to access funding of £800,000 from the fund. And the total projected budget is 1 million over a 3-year period. I'm looking at the number of knots and adding them up there. The council match funding can be met from existing staffing and operational budgets, but the staffing and other resources would be dedicated to this project, so we can't be pulling them off to do other bits and pieces. So what we're asking is that the council is requested to approve and support the submission of this proposal as outlined above.
Thanks, Mary. I think this is a really exciting opportunity, and the fact that the Improvement Service approached Midlothian to ask us to be a part of this joint bid just shows the distance the council's travelled as being seen as a real a council that's really embracing innovation and new ways of working and looking at how we actually tackle some of the reforms in social policy. It really is a demonstration of the work that's been undertaken. I think we also have to recognise the significant work that's been undertaken to pull together this bid from the Council's point of view. I know from discussions I've had, it's not been an easy task to, in the short space of time that we've had, so very much recognise the significant work that's gone in to be able to pull this together. I'm certainly very keen that we endorse this bid. I think it presents us with a real opportunity to bring in some, not only the extra funding, but the extra expertise that we get through working with Improvement Service and Edinburgh University and the wider partnership to really look at doing something in a different way to help tackle some of the inequalities we have in some of our communities in Midlothian. So a real opportunity for us here and a really exciting opportunity for us to try and secure this. And as I say again, it really shows you the distance we've travelled to now for us as a council being seen as the partner that the Improvement Service want to work with in delivering this. Bob?
Thanks. I would particularly refer to in 2.3, I would agree with everything you said, Leader. In the localising access to customer transit, particularly welcome the idea of expanding the use of the libraries, as we mentioned earlier on today, and I hope we'll gain the experience we'll gain from that will we can spread through the rest of the county in later years.
Thank you. Colleagues, happy to accept the recommendation to endorse this bid? Thank you. That then takes us to item number 11, which, as we have already agreed, we're going to suspend standing orders to consider, is for purchasing new properties for Uses Council Housing. Kevin.
Thank you, Chair. The purpose of the report is to seek elected members' agreement to reallocate available resources from the HRA in purchasing additional properties. This proposal originally came before Cabinet on the 27th of May towards an identified development at Wester Cowden in Dalkeith. And this report is now requesting that the same resource is now used towards additional units to be provided for alternative housing across Midlothian. This results from the need to relocate households from New Byers Crescent and Gore Avenue in Gore Bridge as a result of the Council decision on the 17th of June to demolish those properties that are affected by CO2 gas emissions. In order to finance the purchase of additional properties, it's proposed that this is funded through the HRA capital plan. The 400,000 unallocated resource has been made available from the Scottish Government, which was announced in October 2013. And if not utilised in Midlothian, that grant funding will be reallocated to another local authority area. The extra investment is affordable without having to impose any further increases in weekly rents. Dependent on the number of properties that are required and the outcome for the proposal in the demolished site within the new social housing phase 2 budget, which may be required to be utilised. Consequently, it's recommended that Cabinet notes the contents of the report in the reallocation of the available resource will no longer be used for purchasing at Wester Cowden, but utilised for housing options for tenants at New Byers Crescent and Gore Avenue, and that agrees to increasing the supply of new housing through purchase of units, subject to satisfactory contracts being overseen by the Council's legal services. Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin. I think the story at New Byers isn't a stranger to any of us now, and we've always said that we'll do whatever we can as a Council to help support the transition there. So I think this shift of funding to support the purchase of new properties to help the ongoing smooth transition of residents at New Byers to a new permanent solution is very helpful. Certainly welcoming the recommendations. Colleagues, any other questions or comments?
No, I think it's fortunate that we've got the money available, and I think it's got to be used. We can see there is an urgent need here to deal with the issue and the problem we've got, and this seems the best way forward, and it also helps, it should help hopefully keep people in the community where they want to be. So I think it's to be welcome.
Okay, so accept the recommendation, section 4. Thank you. Takes us to item 12, annual gas safety checks.
Thank you, Chair. This report is in relation to the Council's duties as a landlord to ensure responsibility for safety of its tenants occupying a property. As a landlord, the Council has to take all reasonable steps to ensure that we carry out work relative to gas safety, and Midlothian Council does achieve 100% success rate in gas servicing to its council housing. This report outlines the rationale now for introducing a range of measures aimed at reducing the number of tenants who fail to attend gas safety check appointments, and the proposal is to introduce a charge for gas forced entries. The background is detailed in section 2. Essentially, we have forced entries made to 450 of our council houses. That's out of a stock of just short of 6,500 each year. This allows for the annual servicing of boilers. On a forced entry basis, it costs around £200 per property, which totals around £90,000 for forced entry. Tenants are not currently charged for this failure to provide access for what is a statutory duty. The gas forced entry procedure itself has been reviewed as part of the Housing Service Review, and this review has evidenced a higher proportion of repeat offenders within the gas forced entry experimentation that's currently being taken place. Essentially, 39% of our existing tenants are subject to gas forced entry. Within that, the stage of a forced entry to the property, we found that there was someone at home in 85% of those cases where we had visited for the gas forced entry. The figures are detailed in terms of the table within 2.1 around the volumes of visits and servicing and actual entries that are gained into properties. There's also the table prior to 2.2 in relation to the range of access required on a forced basis over the period of 2012-13. We've also looked in terms of benchmarking with other councils and our neighbouring authorities at Scottish Borders, the City of Edinburgh, East and West Lothian respectively, do charge based on the staff's hourly rate for those who are attending the gas forced entry. It's proposed, as detailed in section 2.3, that we also take tenancy action in relation to the tenancy agreement, where there is that obligation for tenants in terms of their tenancy responsibilities for us to match our landlord responsibilities to provide access for the gas safety checks. Consequently, it's proposed that Housing Services will undertake a pilot exercise to undertake annual tenancy inspections for those properties which previously have had a gas forced entry, which will also give us the opportunity to review the condition of the tenancy and the tenancy obligations. As detailed in section 2.4, we do encounter capped gas supplies. These are gas supplies where tenants have had insufficient funds in terms of maintaining the utility. It is proposed that we do not levy a charge in relation to those households, as it is intended that the project team will liaise with improving opportunities across Midlothian to deal with any fuel poverty issues and maximise household income to the tenants concerned. That takes me to recommendations listed in section 5. An agreement is being sought to introduce a charge for the forced entries, with the exception of those households which have the gas supply capped, that we would introduce the tenancy warnings which are established for other tenancy breaches, specifically for those properties where forced entry is required. That's to be aligned to the pilot exercise proposed for those identified households where we've had repeat forced entries required, and to take an analysis of those households with the capped gas supply to liaise for appropriate support and financial inclusion to be provided to those households. Thank you.
I suppose it's encouraging that the vast majority of our tenants, that there are no issues and appointments are made and the gas supply is able to be checked, but unfortunately there are a minority who are obviously not responding to what, from the appendix we can see, is numerous attempts at contact in advance of any need for a forced entry. And when you look at the fact that 40% almost of those who have a forced entry have also... it's happened before. I think in that case it is reasonable for us to apply a charge in these circumstances. I would hope that by taking a step, and it's going to, I know it's going to be clearly outlined to tenants, so, and it will be at an early stage that this could be an ultimate sanction, that might in turn result in a bigger reduction in the need for any forced entries at all, and the fact that we can then use it as a way to help and support those who really need that help, I think is encouraging as well. So from that basis, I would move recommendations at section 5, but as I say, it is important to recognise it really is a minority of our tenants where this is ever going to be an issue.
Yes, I think I agree, and it's entirely reasonable to do that. As you can see, there with other councils in the Scottish Borders, Edinburgh, East Lothian and West Lothian also have this charge. And if you look above that point, the amount of people's time being wasted for that, I think this is entirely reasonable. Perhaps it should have been done before.
I think there's lots of underlying reasons for these things. I mean, people who are getting forced entries are generally not reading anything that comes through their door. Is there any kind of prior investigative work that can be done before writing out and forcing entry?
I certainly appreciate the point, and has been referenced, there is an escalation process currently of three stages with the contractor involved, but we also supplement that with our own investigations, both in terms of what's known on the housing systems about tenancy, but equally in terms of our social work colleagues through Framework I. So we are trying to assess any vulnerabilities, which ultimately we have identified through the gaining entry and finding out that there are capped supplies, which have not been evident to us because that information isn't shared through the utility companies. But the proposals are seeking to address that on a balanced approach, not only through enforcement, but also to intervene and facilitate for those households where we know or find through gaining entry that there are other symptomatic issues in the household.
I just have concerns about, we want to maximise our opportunities for our rental income, and I think by charging people £200 who are in difficulties for all sorts of reasons and owed money to everyone, it's just another £200 that we're unlikely to be able to recover, and we have to be very careful about charging that and not helping. Thank you.
I think that's the point of putting in place the extra support for those who do need it, because unfortunately it won't be in every circumstance that is the case, and certainly when you see it, it's actually, there's been a number of visits where it's not just a letter through the door but somebody at the door asking for entry prior to the forced visit, and then when you actually do force to find that they're actually at home at the time that forced entries having to be undertaken, it is a massive frustration that has to happen. So I think we do need to take some action to look at this, but equally absolutely recognising the point that there will be a number of people in here who need support, and that support is what's been offered here. Can we agree the recommendations on that basis? Thank you. That takes us to the end of the public agenda. Items 13 and 14 are to be taken in private.